Hey, Drew. I'm not able to hear you. It said you didn't connect to audio. It's still nothing. Connect the audio. There we go. Think you're good. I'm not hearing you. Can you hear me okay? I can't hear you. How about now?
Hey, how are you?
There it is, the mute
There
button.
it is.
Hey,
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Good to see you.
You too.
Where are you this fine day?
I'm sorry for dialing in even just a little bit late here. I thought I was going to have to dial in via phone line on my in my office, and then realized that it would probably just be better and more efficient since I had my cell phone relatively handy to just pop out and grab it.
Awesome.
Good. Life is good. I am just starting a new tour, you may remember. I had finished up the last several months forming a merger
Yep.
between my mission organization and a bigger other one. And that went live on Monday, and it went off without a hitch. It
That's
was
great.
about as smooth as one could have hoped for.
That's awesome.
And you know, thank you in so many ways for the stratospheric guidance on leadership, on direction, on communication, on synchronization, choreography. You know, you helped me think much more clearly and very intentionally about what the messaging needed to look like in planning for the rollout and in the rollout, in bringing the leadership team together. And taking full advantage of what our milestones and accountability needed to look like.
Awesome.
And it was funny because I hadn't yet worked through module four. And I kind of started cafeteria style a la carting this morning when I was getting back into it. And so I'm kicking around in there, and you know, the three words that were jumping out at me in a few of the videos this morning, authority, accountability, and responsibility. Which I've already used several times today, so thanks for making me look great in that respect. In reflection, right, like the sentiments were all there, and those were a lot of the approaches that we took to try to make sure we got this over the finish line. But all to say, I'm even more excited now as I start a new job and review structures and try to maximize productivity and increase cohesion to think in those ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, look, getting ahead of myself, I started on Monday. I'm the deputy director of a large enterprise office that has extraordinary visibility and impact across our entire agency. And so it was really quite a promotion, especially for a young guy like me. I'm definitely
Man,
the
that's
youngest by an
amazing.
order of magnitude. And then I don't say
Congratulations.
that to boast, all to say I'm feeling a lot of pressure.
Yes,
And I
I would
want to do
imagine.
this right.
Okay, so how many people do you oversee now as a deputy
I need to find out, to be quite honest. Directly, I think it's 30-ish,
Okay.
oh, maybe a little under. And outside of
Wait,
the
did you
people
say
managed.
directly, like your direct reports? You have 30 direct reports?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Whew.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Is there a way to change that?
A great question. I think I would
That's
like to devolve some of
too
that
much.
to the group chiefs if I can.
You'd like to what?
Devolve that to the group chiefs.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know the structure. Walk me through the language of your
So
structure
they're the
here.
next tier down.
Okay, and how many
There's the
are there
director, the
of?
deputy director, and a series of group chiefs.
Okay, so yeah, my suggestion is in general in management, whenever humanly possible, no more than 10 direct reports.
I've heard that before, and I was really happy to hear you say it too. It was
Yeah,
reassuring and reaffirming.
I think it's too overwhelming. Your effectiveness drops dramatically, and people don't get what they need, and problems happen as a result. So I definitely recommend. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, government is so weird, and there's so many rules and restrictions about how you do that. But if there's any way that you can empower you know, even five would be better than 10. You know, I don't
know what I'm shooting for, just the group chiefs. I would like to empower them.
Okay. So walk me through. Yeah. Maybe I misunderstood. I thought you had 30 group chiefs.
No, sorry. I think there are five.
Okay.
Four or five. Or five and a deputy. One has a deputy. And I just got the staffing table and all, you know, the contract rosters and all of that. So I need to sit down and study it and break it out.
Okay. So for sure, be thinking about the module four and how you create structure and clarity and roles and responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly. That's why
you're thinking of those, of empowering those five. That's critical to be thinking about for sure.
Okay.
And so who's below group chiefs?
Program managers.
Okay.
And or team leads.
Okay.
I don't think we have branch chiefs in this office. I think it's too small.
So just so I understand, I know there's a lot you can't share, but you went from chief of staff at one agency to now deputy director of another larger agency?
Same agency, just a different part of the agency. Okay. The top deck of the agency. So it's one of our corporate functions. And that's what I do for a living. This is my home career service. I operate out of this corporate flight deck, kind of these corporate functions that help, you know, manage the enterprise. I was on a broadening assignment or rotation down into one of our specific mission elements where I was helping their front office leadership team and manage those lines of effort. So I'm back up for the entire agency on the flight deck.
I see. Okay. That I hadn't understood about the way that works. How many agencies are you having to now oversee from the corporate deck?
We will touch every mission component by the nature of our work. Literally every. It's my job to help ensure all of our missions everywhere all the time.
Okay, so and again,
overseeing isn't the right word.
Well, I guess I'm wanting to make sure I'm translating your language, and I want to make sure I understand your span of control and your scope, so that I can help you best. But I'm also sensitive to the fact that there's things you can't share. So what I want to make sure I'm clear on is, so when you say all the missions, what you mean is there is one group that is fairly siloed that does a particular function, and they have a leadership team and all that stuff, and that's a group chief that reports into your corporate level, or what? That's what I'm trying to understand is how it's structured and about how many you're dealing with. Because while the principles are the same, the tools that I might recommend vary based on the level of complexity. So that's what I'm trying to get head around it. And also, like at that corporate level, when you oversee, are we talking 300 people all told with all the elements and all the missions and everything that you oversee, or is it 10,000? You know, those are two very different kinds of things that will help me.
Yeah. So there's my office, which I don't know what the exact number is. You know, it's probably classified to a degree, but all to say it's, you know, several dozen. Under 100.
Okay.
Group chiefs oversee each line of effort, and you know all of the other line workers fall underneath them. So there's the director, there's me, the deputy director, and then there's all these group chiefs who oversee each line of effort.
Got it. And so for a period of time, you were the chief of staff for one of the group chiefs? No.
Different office altogether. I was the chief of staff for a completely different mission center.
Okay. Yeah. And you have no relationship to that mission center anymore. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep. Every 2 to 3 years in the IC, in much of the DOD even too, you know, you rotate between jobs and assignments. I finished my assignment up. It was a quick 1 year assignment based on the merger, got merged out of a job. That happens. And so I applied for and got this new position. This will be a 2 to 3 year assignment. It's in my home career service, which is, you know, it's like that seventh floor, top floor. I was hired to help run our agency in a lot of different ways and support the leadership team. So that's what I do for a living. And now as one of our corporate offices, I'm back in one of our corporate offices helping run that office. the mission of the office is to help every other mission component in the entire agency ensure that they can do what they do every day, all the time.
And it's all IC related.
Yep.
Okay. And when you're looking at so how many roughly mission functions are there? I don't know if I'm using the right language, but
for my office or for the agency?
For the agency, because I assume you run the entire agency.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thousands.
Okay, thousands.
Hundreds.
Hundreds
for sure. Yeah.
Hundreds
depends
of different.
How weedy we'd want to be.
Okay. So when you have five group directors, what kind of span of control are they having to deal with and manage? How are they structured roughly?
That's a good question. I wrote down the same question. When I meet with them, I have to find out. This is day three.
Oh, okay.
That's
okay.
A good question. I will.
I assume that because this was your home office, you already knew some of this. So there's.
I've got a decent idea. Okay. But I need to ask them.
Okay.
Because the director who hired me is rebuilding and has been over the last year in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So my historic understanding of the office is probably not accurate.
Okay.
Any longer.
What is your what's your end game? What's your goal? What's winning look like in 5 years for you?
Yeah, I need to that's a great question, and I need to reevaluate that. Because I had aspired to be the chief of staff of a large mission component in my career, and I've done that now.
Yeah.
And to be the deputy director of a corporate function
is already over what you had dreamed about.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it just completely recalibrates my entire career trajectory. And I haven't had time to think about that. And so in addition to helping run this enterprise very well, I need to help figure out what my own future and trajectory looks like.
I imagine a director role is highly political. I mean, that's not a function of you just do a great job and you become a director one day. I imagine that's an appointed role.
Thankfully, no. You're wrong here. In my agency, we are quite apolitical.
Really?
Okay. Which is great. Yes, I think it's great in both the career development perspective, but also in the ability to get mission done.
That's awesome. Wow, I didn't realize that existed. That's great.
I know. We don't have very many political appointees in the whole agency, so that's great.
Okay, and what is...
That's a savvy dynamic. Thanks for asking.
Yeah, you bet. What is your... I'll call it your credible competency, and here's what I mean by that. So... In the corporate world, you know, when you get to the level that you're at, you usually climb through various ranks in which you're building your credibility in a craft. So the craft might be finance, or the craft might be accounting, or it might be marketing, or it might be sales. And then you get to a certain level where your craft is no longer, the thing that got you there isn't the thing you now use anymore, right? Does that apply to your situation? Did you have a certain trade craft that you developed, and that now you're at a management level and the specific tradecraft is no longer as essential, or is there still tradecraft that you're accountable for?
The tradecraft is still applicable. Thankfully, this, my career service, you know, I was hired to help run our enterprise and support our leadership team. And so there is a tradecraft, as you probably recall from the Chief of Staff Association, some of that, you know, research that you might have done on their website, you know, there are people, executive assistants, executive officers, chiefs of staff who do this for a living, who help strategic plan and resource and train and equip and budget, recruit, retain, all that stuff. So all of those sort of corporate management enterprise functions, that is I guess we call it tradecraft unto itself.
Oh, it's absolutely tradecraft.
Acumen, right?
Most people don't have that in the corporate world. They don't see it as a tradecraft. They have to be notified that it's a tradecraft because most people think of the siloed functions as the tradecraft. And then when they get the management, I'll just do what I've been doing, and they mess it up. So
I think you're right. And to be honest, it's the same in our agency. So I've just been hopping around from front office suite, to front office suite, helping get their ships in order, support their leadership teams, elevate their games. And now I'm very much doing that in this office. The current director is rebuilding several of the lines of effort. And so what that means, you know, is just to a lot of your module outlines and talking points, you know, it's a really clear mapping and outlining of missions, making sure that those are in fact value add, that there's a maximization of personnel and materiel, and that everyone is working towards those visions and values, and that everything is really tightly and shrewdly aligned. And, you know, it's the government. So oftentimes we're not very good at that. This guy's great as both a manager and as a best practice in so many of the ways that you talk about. So I'm excited to be working with and for him. I've already learned a lot. And so it's that same sort of tradecraft that I suspect I will, you know, be employing here.
Okay. All right. So it's management tradecraft. That's what I wanted to understand. That there, you know, for example, sometimes when you get into a management role and you're running a software company and you've never done software, your credibility and decision-making can be called into question. And so I just wanted to understand if that was at issue here, and it doesn't sound like it is. It sounds like there's a validation of the tradecraft you have. So that's good. Okay. Awesome.
Now, trying to earn trust and convince people that I am effective at that tradecraft as a young guy, a lower graded guy, that will be one of my first priorities. And I need to do that in word and in deed. But ever since I joined the professional world, you know, managing a resort at 22, you know, $250 million property, 847 employees, golf courses, convention centers, water parks, like, and then a think tank, I've always been operating from that vantage point.
Yeah.
And so I've honed this managerial tradecraft pretty well. And now, you know, looking for good tools and more best practices on how I can convey that and earn that trust quickly, garner buy-in for some new initiatives. And the director said very publicly to the management team and the rest of the office, you know, he's brought me in to help manage change. I have a track record of effectively managing change in a very strategic way and manifesting that into day-to-day, week-to-week milestones that are achievable, that have accountability, that, you know, that can get it done.
Okay, so then with that, what I might suggest is also start consuming the first 90 days module. That's a bonus in the training.
Oh, great. It's the first, I was going to ask if we had something like that. There are some books out. Oh, that just warms me so much, Shane.
Yeah. So that's best practices from books, my own experience, all kinds of things, research. First 90 days success plan, which is all designed to get early wins. So as you know, and I think you're already pretty effective at it intuitively, otherwise you wouldn't be able to get where you are, but this might just give you some, a little more confidence and calm. It might verify things you're already doing, honestly. But the big thing is the first 90 days, as you know, you're actually granted 100% credibility in the first 90 days. People just go, you're credible. You're the new guy, unless somebody's got, you know, a bone to pick or they're envious or angry at you or whatever. But assume you come in cold and they're like, okay, the boss says that's the one. We all just go, that's the one for about 90 days.
That's fascinating.
Every word you say, every decision you make will either maintain that credibility or lose it. If you lose it in the first 90 days, it can take you more than a year to get it back if you can get it back.
Yeah.
If you maintain it for the first 90 days, it's actually hard to lose it after that. So that first 90 days is a critical window.
Okay.
I think you're naturally good at it, so I don't have a lot of concerns for you. But I think there might be a few tactics and some frames in that training that you might find useful. And if nothing else, just lower your own anxiety, just to give you that confidence that, like, okay, I do know what I'm doing. I'm on the right track. And it'll give you some helpful frames. You know, the STARS model. Are you familiar with the STARS model?
It sounds very familiar.
STARS is just an acronym to help you kind of grade various aspects or missions or functions in an organization. So you've got startup mode, turnaround mode, accelerated growth, realignment, and then sustaining growth, right? So those are the kind of the five, okay. STARS. They're just the five different things. And the most important thing to understand about this, which people who do this research don't actually connect it this way, but I do, every one of those has a dominant resonant emotion. So for example, if you're in startup mode, the dominant resonant emotion is overwhelm and excitement. If you are in realignment, the dominant resonant emotion is denial, meaning realignment means they all think they're going the right way, but you can see they're not. And so how you deal with denial is very different than how you deal with overwhelm.
I think you talked about this in one of your module one.
What's that? Sorry, say it again.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can now. No, okay. I now that you're talking about emotions, and I really appreciate that because the human condition is always at play. I recall some of this maybe from one of your earlier modules. And yeah, I remember thinking like, yeah, oh, he gets it because it's all about emotion.
Yeah, well, I mean, my entire training and approach is that 80% of behavior is governed by the emotional system. And the emotional system is defined as how I feel about the work I'm doing and how I feel about the people I work with and for. So that is the governing body of why my management and coaching is different from most people's, because it scuba dives in that realm most of the time and it finds tools and levers to influence that realm. So that's the first thing, just as a kind of a context setter. But when we get into when you're starting to look at a new enterprise, a new organization, a new something, and you're assessing where are they at large and where are they specifically, you're looking at, you know, yes, are they in a startup mode, a turnaround, realignment? But beyond that, you're wanting to ask the question, what's the emotion underneath that? The specific emotion for realignment is denial. The specific emotion for turnaround is despair. The specific emotion for startup is overwhelm. So the worst thing you can do is treat a realignment the way you would treat a turnaround, because denial takes time. You want to slow your change management down. Whereas turnaround, if you slow it down, you increase despair. So if you use the wrong intervention with the wrong time at the wrong dominant emotion, you get the opposite results. So paying attention to that dominant emotion will help you pace the change. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Is that in the 90 days thing?
And that's in the 90 days thing. I walk you through all of that and help you diagnose. And then what we can do if you want is, you know, you can just sketch out what you think you're seeing and then come and talk to me and yeah. Let me know, like, this is what I'm seeing. Thank and I you. Might help you go, actually, that's not turnaround. That's this. And actually, you're going
to
look
I at started this. A draft email to you, like I said, I would, and then realized that I didn't have enough data to really make it worth your time to send it. So I held. And now hopefully after this week, I'll have some more to come back with.
Great. Best place to start is that first 90 days training. Start digging in there. You don't need to, unless you are dealing with crisis turnaround, which I don't think you are, you don't need to move super fast. So don't assume you're going to achieve much in the first 90 days. The first 90 days is really getting smart about culture. Make sure you understand the culture. So yeah, you were there a year ago. Maybe the culture is identical, probably is, but just in case you want to ask the question, has the culture shifted based on new leadership? That can happen. You want to get expectations alignment is huge. That's the second biggest thing you want to focus on. And when I say expectations alignment, I'm referring almost entirely to getting yourself aligned with the director. And here's the thing about expectations alignment. Aligning expectations. No problem. Aligning expectations. And by the way, all of this is in the training. I'm just giving you a preview so you can, you don't have to take notes if you don't want. Anyway, and it's also in a guidebook. You can download the workbook and it's.
Oh, great. Yeah, I've already downloaded several of the worksheets. That's great. Yeah.
So that there's a little workbook on this one, on that bonus. Aligning expectations is really all about, this isn't in the module, but this is the truth. Getting expectations aligned in any context, anytime you're trying to make sure that when you get hired to do something and your boss says you're empowered to do X, Y, and Z, just assume that you will misunderstand what X means, what Y means, and what Z means. And it's okay. Like, you got to go in and realize that expectations alignment is a series of conversations marked by misunderstandings. That's what it is. And so just get good at having a series of conversations. Don't assume that one is done. Understand that each word has a span of meaning, a semantic range that may not be shared by you. And so that those things can be very helpful. So anyway, oh, just
to right. Yeah, I was thinking of that too. And I mean, the cognitive biases that are overlaying those conversations, the way I'm hearing it, like the way he's intending it.
Absolutely.
My wife and I were talking about that just last night, actually. So yeah.
It's very, very common. Sure. It's very, very common, especially when you've been told. This happens all the time. They go, okay, we need you to come in and shake things up. We need change. The reason we're hiring you is to change things. And you go, that's my mastery. I'm a change guy. I love to change things. And you get in and you start changing. They're like, whoa, what are you doing? You're not changing that. And what? Not changing that. Hang on a minute. But they don't tell you that. What happens is people start talking about you, but not to you. And they're all going, why the heck is he changing? That doesn't make any sense, especially in the first 90 days, because you have so much credibility, they don't want to challenge you. So they tend to just secretly talk about how you shouldn't be changing that. And it takes you a little while before you realize, oh, I've stepped in the wrong thing. I didn't even know it. And I thought I had a mandate, and I don't have a mandate. And so that's the really important thing, is to start. And the first 90 days training will give you guidance on exactly how to do that.
Okay. That's great. That is great.
Let me pause for just a minute. Welcome, Michelle. We'll come back to you in a second. Michelle, greetings. Are you with us?
I am here.
Hey, how are you?
How are you?
Very good, thanks.
I am well, thank you.
Good. We have a bunch of people who are traveling this week, so most of our crew is gone. So we got a small group, which is fun for me.
I like to go
in and go deep.
I was enjoying the exchange between you and I'm sorry, I don't know the other gentleman's name.
This is Drew.
Nice to meet you, Michelle.
Hi, Drew.
Michelle's been with us for at least 15 weeks. She enrolled for another 9 months of coaching. And so I've really enjoyed working with her. Drew has just joined us a couple of weeks ago. This is his third call, I think second time on, though. And I think you were gone the last time he had joined. So. And Drew is, as you may have heard, he's a deputy director in a government function in the intelligence community. And that's about all he's allowed to say to us about.
Yeah, no, understand. My husband is in the Air Force, so totally understands. But thank you for everything that you help do behind the scenes. Anyways, but some of our information is, I don't know, roles are kind of similar. So I was pulling, as you were talking, I was pulling just a lot different. My 90 days is more like a, I don't know, we'll talk about a year.
Yeah, your 90 days has been hard for sure.
It's just a slow go. And
Drew, for context, Michelle's first 90 days and year now are governed by trying to get expectations alignment between two equal owners who have diametrically opposed visions for how it's supposed to go. So she's kind of been, go stop, and so she's kind of pulling her hair out and ready to cash in her chips.
Sorry.
No, I was interested in, you know, because there is a lot of change management that needs to occur, whether it's just a tweaking of a process. It's just, you know, we have a box, and I'm learning that if it doesn't go, we can't color outside those lines at all. Well, I mean, I do payroll and HR. 98% of our world is inside a box, but there are times that you have to learn how to color outside the box. And we provide a service, so it's not like it's just internal payroll. Totally different. So, anyways, so that change management piece is huge, but just getting individuals to want to change has been my struggle.
Okay, so are you trying to lead up or down or across?
All the above.
Okay, so you won't be able to lead change down until you have buy-in from above.
Agreed.
So, and you've looked at video 12 of module 1, which is the staging the ascent?
Yes, I will. I mean, I keep re-watching videos because I get a lot. I hear what it says the first time, and I'm, you know, I have to absorb information very, I have to be, anyways, it takes me a couple times because sometimes I zone out and so I have to go back in.
So, I have an effect on a lot of people.
No, it's not you. It's just there's a reason my son has ADHD. That's what I can't. So anyways, I get distracted with, hey, look, squirrel. And anyways, so you're 100% correct. It's getting the buy-in, and it's not that the owners don't have the buy-in. It's where my break comes is, so I got to switch earbuds. one wants to go faster, one wants to go slower, and that's where we are. So okay. It's everything is, I mean, I had the conversation yesterday of, look, at this point, I don't know if I'm even doing what you want me to do. You've hired me for a role. I don't feel that I can achieve the role. And basically, I'm just going to go with, if you don't tell me that, you know, if I'm doing what you want, and all I can ask you to do is tell me when you don't, when I'm not doing what you want, because I really don't know at this point what you want.
Yeah. Another approach you could try. And again, I think you're in a really untenable position. So we've had enough conversations for me to know that we're now just throwing things against the wall, but I'm going to attempt this. And I think it's worth your attempting it also. See if you get some progress. I think you need to go back and watch video 12.
Okay.
And that's the one that talks about staging the ascent. And I think what you do is you go to them and you outline for them the ascent. Here's what it's going to take in order for change to happen. And the ascent includes only three steps: awareness, understanding, and enrollment. And it takes time to achieve each of those. So have you ever heard how people climb Everest? This is where the metaphor comes from. Do you know how Everest gets climbed? They spend 3 weeks at base camp, or 6 weeks in some cases, just to get acclimatized. Then they go up to camp one, stay for a night, and come back down to base camp for about four nights. Then they go up to camp one, then to camp two, then back all the way down to base camp, and they stay for a few more nights. And so there's this up and down process. You don't just climb Everest. You do this whole thing to get your body acclimated to higher altitudes. Well, the exact same thing is true in change management. And what that means is you need to say to them, hey, sounds like you guys want change. What we know about change is the first step is awareness. Here's what awareness is defined as. I don't care about this change. I don't understand this change. I don't agree with this change. Great. You have permission to feel all of those things. We're only at camp one. Camp one is just so you know a change is coming. You still don't have to care about it. You don't have to agree with it. You don't even have to understand it. Just know a change is coming. Then camp two is understanding. Now, at camp two, I still don't need you to care about it. I still don't need you to agree with it. And I don't need you to change any of your behavior. But I do need you to understand what the change is. So ask all the questions you need to ask, push, challenge, prod, try to understand why we're doing it, what it means, what the implications are. Don't agree with any of it yet. Understand it. Don't skip camp two. Then the final camp is enrollment. Now, there are camps beyond that, but that's just great ownership and leadership of the camps beyond that. But the main camp is enrollment, which is I now understand it, and I have decided to say yes to your change. And the way that I lead change management organizations is I quite literally state, here are the camps on the way to the change, and here's what they mean, and here are the dates by which we expect you to be at each camp. So what meetings and conversations do we need to have in order to achieve this date for this camp? So what that could do for you is if you were to lead up with that tool, you would simply go to them and say, hey, everybody, here are the three camps. Here's the path. You guys decide by what date you want to be at each of these camps. And by the way, you can't be at all of them at the same date, because you're going to have to cascade this information, meaning the first layer of management shouldn't be at awareness at the same time as the next rung down. So it has to cascade. This rung has to be at understanding before this rung's at awareness. Then this rung has to be at understanding before this rung's at enrollment. So you cascade it. And all you're doing is you're just giving them a tool by which they can have a conversation to get alignment around how fast they want the change to happen. And instead of just kind of the vague change is happening and it's too fast, you're actually having concrete conversations about actual steps in the process with real dates and deadlines that they can then look at and go, oh, you mean in 2 months? Yeah, I can live with that. And then in another month, it's that. And then in a fourth month, it's going to be that. That sounds like the right pacing. And the other guy can go, no, let's not wait 2 months. let's do it in the first month. And now they're having concrete tactical discussions about pacing. And you've provided them a structure to do that. So get really smart on that change, on that module. Get super smart about how that stuff works. Ask any questions to me you want to ask. And then help them plan their ascent.
Okay.
I've
got a meeting in 5 minutes, so I'm going to quick step out. But thanks again for the recap on Mount Everest. I love that analogy, and it's actually going to help me this afternoon. So appreciate it.
Keep at it, Drew.
Michelle, very nice to meet you.
Nice meeting you as well, Drew. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See ya. Okay, so does that make sense?
It makes complete sense.
Okay. Who knows? It may not help, but it gets you one step closer to a shot at it.
Right. I'm finding I that's exactly what I need to do, is very much lay it out in a concise. Yeah. There's a lot of, we seem to be leading, and like you said earlier, what, 80% of things are driven by emotions. There's a lot of emotion that is going on with the decisions that are being made in this company. We seem to make them on emotion, not best business sense, but how we feel people are going to feel about that.
What is the emotion?
Fear.
What else?
I don't know anything past fear.
Okay.
To be honest, it's just, I'm fearful because every time I talk to them, it's okay. We want to make sure everybody's okay, because if everybody leaves, we can't do the payroll. I'm right. Like, and I was like, no. And I told Pete, you need to stop. I said, you have three very comparable individuals that you have just hired that could literally do the implementation and continue the payroll. The only thing I can't get done logistically, simply because I'm not there, is packing out of the payrolls to send it to the individuals. Someone in the office there in New York would have to take care of it. But the three people that you just hired, myself and the two other people, everybody could walk out today and we could get everything done and you wouldn't skip a beat. I said, you need to let that go. You need to stop being held captive by these individuals, because you're good.
How did he respond?
He accepted it. He was like, you know, Michelle, thank you. Yes, thank you for telling me that.
Good. Good. You're giving encouragement. You are giving courage up. So that is, by the way, the solution. When I ask what's the dominant emotion, it's fear. The solution is, of course, courage. And mm-hmm. So there are lots of ways to activate courage in a system. And you just did it in one way, which is you challenged the story and you replaced it with a different story that gave courage to that person. And so for you, one of your gifts in the world is courage. You're actually quite fearless as a person. And so I think what's beautiful about you in that context is, if there's that much fear, then you have to become the embodiment of courage for them. And you have to start showing them, as you just did, how to embody their own courage. And it's okay to use that word. You know, and it's okay to celebrate when you see them doing it. So this is a funny thing when you reward people for what they do well, not just tell them what they're doing wrong. So you'd say to your boss, hey, I want to tell you, I see the courage it took to do that. And I have to tell you, I think that is exactly what we need in this organization. More courage, like you just showed.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly he's gone, okay, all right, yeah, courage is good. So you're giving them frames to start thinking differently.
Right.
You're naming the behavior that's really good. I mean, I hate to say it, it's training a puppy, but that's what it is. Humans aren't that different from puppies.
I was just thinking the same thing. I'm like, it's just how I train my dogs.
Exactly. Yep. So I think there's a lot of that you're going to have to do. But the good news is you have that courage. And that's going to help them.
I think that I the courage, and it's finding the right words is the other part that I struggle with. Or as I call it, having more grace under fire.
Yes, that is part of your technique. So I've given you a couple of tools. Do you remember any of them? Have you tried any of them?
I'm just going to answer no, only because my brain is very overwhelmed. It's year end and there's a lot of things coming at me. So if you start telling me, I'm sure I can say yes or no.
So there were a couple of things. One is just to, it's just beginning to observe without judgment. Like, yes. Can you see and name the emotion you're having without having to act on it?
I've been doing a lot of that.
Okay, good. So you have been doing it.
I have been doing a lot of that. And I've actually determined a few things about myself. You know, one of the things we talked about, you said it goes back to a lot of my parents, and it has a lot with my childhood bringing. There were certain triggers that are going on in my life or going on there that I realized that it's triggering me, that, best way I can explain is fight or flight. I know I'm safe, but it's a fight or flight emotion. Best way I can explain it that comes up, and it's whether I don't feel I'm being listened to, which is basically the biggest thing. I don't feel I'm being listened to when it comes to in the corporate world. And it's not so much from my parents, it's just the whole overall, not having any history, the whole overall situation, because nobody was listening.
Yeah.
And so I get very frustrated when I feel like people are not listening to me. It's like, hello, you hired me. You know, I went through this whole interview process. I told you what I could do or what I couldn't do. You believed in me, but now I'm here and you're not listening. And I get very frustrated with that. So it was just like that the other day. And I had to just like get it out. And then I'm like, all right, well, in the meantime, look, I'm here. In the meantime, this is, you know, this is easy to me. You know, I walked outside, put my feet in the pool. Did something because I am outside of just right now, because we're in year end, I'm bored.
Yeah.
Because I'm not used to, well, it's different in general, but anyways, so not being listened to. And then, I don't know. I think the other trigger points is I don't have a lot of patience for, I don't know what the right terminology is. I don't want to say when people are being, it's not, it all falls into or not listen. Like, let's take the long path around. Let's jump over like this whole long drawn out thing. Yeah. It's teaching me patience. Patience is not my virtue. So you know, this whole where I'm just like, why must we go down this path? Like, just why? It's you're making it harder than it needs to be. Just why? I have no patience for that.
Yeah.
So I'm learning how to do that. So yeah.
Well, like we've talked about, helping you express emotion physically outside of anybody's around, being around, is going to help. So that whole exercise hard, but also do things physically for yourself that they don't have to be just exercise, but like you said, your feet in the pool or your feet on grass, on the ground, barefoot, those things actually help. Looking at the sky, they open you up and they ease you. So lots of things that are physical will help you too. And so keep those up. And then language patterns, you know, probably the big one, which I think you know, is a lot more I instead of you will go a long way for you. So instead of you're not listening, it's I'm not being clear. Let me try again. And
yeah,
it's hard to do in the moment, but it will help if you just get good at memorizing. I'm not being clear. Let me try again. Even if you think you're being clear, it doesn't matter. It signals for somebody that they're not listening. Without saying you're not listening, so they don't feel defensive. It also
those exactly those things that you told me. So out of curiosity, why you know, just
the meta comments help you also. Meta comments, which is like, hey, sometimes I come off this way. I don't mean to. Let me try this, or even permission going. I must not be being clear enough. And I'm not sure that I'm being understood. Would it be okay if I tried it again? And what happens is when you say to somebody, would it be okay? When you ask permission, even though you don't need to ask permission, they will use the word yes. Mm-hmm. When they use the word yes, they're actually changing something in their neurochemistry. They're chemically changing their own bodies and their energy field changes. And they become less defensive. Right. People like to say yes. And when you get them to say that word and mean it, they're going to be more receptive to what you're saying. So that's another language trick.
I've been working on all of those.
Good. And you have been doing it. All the things that you've been doing, all the things.
All the things. I have been. Like I said, you just have to tell me. I don't recall things like right up front, but when we start talking, I'm like, yep, I'm there, I'm on it. So that's why I was like, yeah, just keep talking to me. I have found some positive traction here, although very, you know, well, it's not small, but it's not like this huge large, but just in saying, look, I'm here and however you need me to be, you know, there was a need over here and helping with paid plan time off. Okay. Helped. There was a need here. There was a need there. I've been kind of like the fireman, right? Here, put the plug here, put the plug here, put the plug here, trying to, even today, Michelle, we needed to do this in this year. I'm like, well, I can understand that. But however, in order to make sure things are right for W-2s and blah, blah, we really need to do it as part, you know, we have to make that correction in the previous year. I understand that's not normal, but this is the one time we have to make sure we're paying attention. So I've been trying to change all those things we've been talking about. And I don't know, just be different. And learn.
So awesome. You're doing great. You're doing great. Thank Keep you. At it. The fact that you're seeing shifts is a really good sign. You know, this is the first time that you've indicated to me that you're starting to see little glimmers of hope. There's a little bit of light here and there. And that's awesome. That's exactly what we want. You know, so
yeah.
Celebrate the small wins because those are legit.
Yep. Most definitely. So just, like I said, it's, you know, you said something which were very, you know, I was brought here for a reason, right? I might not understand the reason. And that for some reason spoke volumes to me, as simple as it sounds, right? There's a lot of moving pieces. There's a lot of things I'm doing to help myself. I mean, as I told you before, I don't only have you. I also have a counselor, life coach that helps me work through things I thought I'd already dealt with. Mm-hmm. So a lot of internal stuff. And it, even though this is at a slow pace, it's also allowing me to still provide for my family and give me the pause I need.
Yes.
To be a better version of me.
I am telling you, I have an overwhelming sense that is exactly why you're where you are. And so to de-escalate the intensity helps. And you'll find that things start to open up a bit too on that front. But for sure, you just needed bandwidth. You needed bandwidth to begin to deal with a lot of the change that's going on internally for you.
Yeah, and I just have to learn to be patient, and I'm not patient.
You know what? I would say that you are patient.
Well, thank you. But
and I think it's important for you to start saying that about yourself, or at least say, I'm learning patience. I'm getting better at patience. It's a really weird thing when you talk to yourself about yourself and you lock it in, change happens on a cellular level. So emotion is stored in cells. And cells can be very stubborn. And so when you speak to them in a different way, they shift. So just saying the phrase, I'm stubborn, actually reinforces it. It's all right if you do it sometimes. I'm just, in general, it's good for you to get good at saying the phrase, I'm learning patience. I'm getting better at patience. I think you are getting better at patience. I think you've endured quite a bit more than you've ever endured before in terms of a job. And I think you've shown quite a lot of resilience and patience in that. So celebrate it, name it, claim it, own it. That's real for you.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're right. So I am learning patience. I'm also learning to have less control. So I have control issues and I have patience issues, and I'm learning how to have less of those.
Yes. And you're learning to be patient and trusting, because that's the opposite of control is trust. And you're learning to be trusting. You're exploring and experimenting with trust. And the more it comes online for you, the stronger you become. And that's the beautiful thing about trust, because what you're ultimately trusting is yourself. You are trusting you're not putting your trust in others. You're putting your trust in yourself. And you're saying, I trust I can handle whatever comes. So if the thing doesn't turn out or doesn't get executed the way that I think it should, or whatever the thing in life doesn't happen the way that I want it to happen, that's what control is. That's the impulse to control is, I won't be able to handle it because I can't control myself. I have to control everything and everyone else. People who can't control themselves have to control others. As you learn to trust yourself, you will be free to not have to control situations or other people. Because you'll know, I'm able. I can do this. And I don't think you have to wait very long. You already know this to be true about yourself right now.
Yep. Well, thank you. I'm telling you, there's been a lot of personal movement with me. If there's not been a lot of professional movement, there's been a lot of personal movement with me. So, in trying to be who I want myself to be. So, and don't ask me what that is, because it's hard for me to explain. I just know it's not, I can tell you who I don't want to be. I really don't know, can't tell, I really cannot tell you who I want to be. I just know who I don't want to be.
I can tell you who you want to be. It's very simple. You want to be someone who feels better. Because when you feel better, when you feel relief, all the quote unquote behaviors that you wish you could change, change automatically. Because all the behaviors that you're currently doing that you wish you wouldn't, you're doing because you think it will make you feel better. You just want to feel better. That's not asking too much. It's entirely the right thing to want. And these conversations that we're having right now are designed to help you feel better. They're grounded in truth. I'm not blowing smoke. I'm telling you the truth. I tell you the truth as I see it. That's my commitment to you. And you should feel relief in hearing the words that I say.
And I do.
You're doing better than you give yourself credit for.
I have always been my worst critic.
Yeah, I'd say go easy on my friend. Be nicer to my friend. I see her differently than you see her, I think. I'd like for you to start seeing her the way I see her.
I will try. Well, that's, I mean, that's what I'm trying to work to. So.
You're doing it. So I want you to start noticing the moments where you feel better. Did you feel better after a call like this? Notice it, name it, celebrate it.
Oh no, I do almost after almost every call of a friend of mine that I call and I'm like, you should have heard this. He is a man. Well, I mean, it's talking about you, but it's also, I'm like, I swear, it's like, he knows me, but it helps me see. And I'm like, he's helped me see this and I don't want to be that. So it's one of those friends you have that you can just be you, which is unfortunately in life, you don't get a lot of those. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do, I guess I just don't realize. The way you just put it, but I do, because I leave feeling more inspired, more hopeful, more, okay, I can do this. So.
Yes, you can.
And ready to take on anything that is thrown at me until I reach my frustration point. And then I have to kind of blow off steam.
Yeah, and you don't have to overcomplicate it either. You know, it really doesn't have to be complicated. It is as simple as I feel better now. I don't feel as good now. And you just want to ask, what would feel better? What would feel better in this moment? And I don't mean ecstasy. I mean relief. Mm-hmm. Just 3 degrees cooler, warmer, whatever way you want to go. Whatever that is, that's going to provide just a tiny bit of relief. Try it. Hold on to it for 30 seconds and then ask, what would provide relief next? See, the thing about changing emotional states is that you can't go from rung one on the ladder to rung 12. You have to pass through the other rungs, or it's the merry-go-round. If the merry-go-round on the playground is spinning really, really fast, you can't get on it. It's going to throw you into the bushes. So you have to get on one that's going slower and then slowly speed it up. So if you're in a state of rage, the notion of ecstasy is a long way off. So sometimes rage turns to anger, and that's relief. Mm-hmm. And anger turns to frustration, and that's relief. And it's a slightly less intense version of the same thing, and that's still relief.
Right.
And so you might want to ask just periodically when you're feeling you're in an activated state, you know, what would give me a little bit of relief for only 30 seconds? Walking outside, looking at the sky, does that provide 1 degree of relief? Nope. Okay. Try something else. keep going until you find the thing that provides a little bit of relief. Watching something funny on YouTube, that worked. That was 1%. I laughed. Okay. You know, it doesn't have to be high spirituality either. It just be something that provides relief.
And I have to get, I do have to get better at that. I think I've lived so much in that state of strife. I mean, that's where I grew up, right? There was always this constant that I've just learned to cope with that. To be
there. Neurologically home for you. An activated state is home.
Yep.
Yeah. And it doesn't, and you're learning to train your nervous system into a new state of home.
So that makes, I mean, what you're saying to me, I think you just make sense to me. Like the words you say make sense to me. Because as you're talking about it, I'm just like, huh. And I just, that was the thought that just came to mind. That's where I'm used to being. And therefore that's why I stay, because I don't want to, well, it's not that I don't want to, I don't realize that's what I'm doing. So I have to start making myself realize I need 2 seconds away. I need to go take a walk, pet the dog, do whatever it is to break that moment so that I can stop that. I won't say stop the feeling, but stop the rage of the feeling to become more, speaking of rage of feelings, my dogs are at the door whining because mom was behind a closed door. My husband came to take care of them, and I need to to make myself get out of that moment so that I can act in a logical manner, not in an emotional manner.
Yeah, I might just frame that slightly differently and say, instead of logical versus emotional, just say reactive or ballistic versus strategic and grounded. Because it's okay. Not about not being emotional. Your emotions matter immensely. And your feelings are what we're after in terms of change. We're not just wanting you to manage feelings. We're wanting you to create feelings that feel better to you. So the issue isn't you're being emotional and you need to be logical. The issue is you're being ballistic and it's better to be strategic. Ballistic emotions are like missiles, ballistic missiles. They're warlike, create lots of carnage. Strategic is different, surgical, measured, planned, intentional. You deploy the emotions, even if they're hard emotions, you deploy them in ways that are intended to create change, to break through barriers.
Got it.
But even so, keep it simple. This week, I want you to start looking at and noticing relief. What gives me relief? And when I have that relief, what is that? Does that feel good or bad to me? You know, you might be like, this doesn't feel like home anymore. Good. You've got to start changing how things feel to you. It's good to be in the unknown. It's good to be uncomfortable. If relief feels uncomfortable, good. That means you're forming new neural pathways. And that is the basis of change. And if relief feels good, great. It means the neural pathway is formed and you're on a path that's going to repeat that. You're wanting to get your body and your neurology to repeat patterns of joy. So that becomes second nature for you. So that the state of being that is joy and peace and calm is your natural permanent state. And to be not in that state is an aberration. It's an unusual experience for you. That's what's possible.
Not that it's unusual. It's not even fathomable. So
Okay, I'm going to let that sit, marinate for a little bit. Okay. We're going to move to Susan, who just joined us. Susan, greetings. Glad you could make it.
Hi there. Sorry, even just for a minute.
Not at all.
Hi, Michelle.
No. Glad you're here. We had a number of people who couldn't make it today and some that left early, but glad you could join us.
Good.
How are you doing?
Good. I sent you a quick email when I couldn't. I thought I wasn't going to be able to make it. I had a meeting and then was able to, it wound up faster than I thought it would. I had a question on your favorite interview questions and, you know, getting to the real person versus the one that generally shows up for an interview that's practiced and knows exactly what's going on.
Tell me what you normally do and then I'll add my two cents in because you may already have all the bag of tricks I've got. So let me hear what your bag of tricks are. And
then generally the conversation is, you know, how many other interviews are you going on? Are you actively looking? And what made you apply to this one? Why did you send us your resume? And I always like to know, where else did you send it? Are there similar types of organizations? Are they completely different? And what was interesting about that one and that one? And what was interesting about ours? They don't always answer that. Oh, no, this is the only one. But sometimes you get someone. And to me, the willingness to be open and share that is a good thing. Where do you see yourself in 5 years? I have a huge project and here's what I think it looks like. What's your first step? that sort of thing. I need you to go in and speak to Mary today. We need to let her go. What do you think you're going to, you know, how are you going to handle that?
Good. All good stuff. A couple of other things that are helpful, I find are, I just lost it. I had three. And I looked at the sky and my brain went blank. I got to be careful.
Close that curtain.
I went, oh, this is great. I'm off to the races. I got to go back.
You went to your happy place.
I went to my happy place. This is my happy place. Come on. So the one that I think about is, and I have to phrase it different ways at different levels, but effectively what it is, you know how you get annual performance evaluations?
Yeah.
What do you consistently get as feedback on what you do really well? And the next obvious question, what do you consistently get feedback on the thing that you got to get better at?
Yeah.
So instead of saying what's your greatest weakness, I will say refer back to a specific annual review, your performance evaluation. And sometimes I'll even show them that it's okay by telling them mine. So mine was always attention to detail. I was more strategic, big picture. And so attention to detail was harder for me.
Yeah.
What was yours? What's the one that you get? I'm not saying you have to answer me. I'm just saying that's how I would ask.
No. Yeah. That's fine. I mean, mine is that I pay too much to the detail and could you just step back and see the bigger picture?
Great. Yeah. So reveal that to that person and ask that. I would have them take both the 5 leadership languages quiz and the 7 management polarities quiz.
Okay.
Because.
Go ahead.
What that'll do is it'll give you like a little bit of another way to have a conversation. So you'd say, hey, I noticed you scored really low or really high on this. How true does that feel for you? How does that show up for you? And it can be very insightful. It is one of the fastest ways to get at those hidden realities that are motivating people. The 7 management polarities are excellent because you'll get a sense for, wow, this is a doer, not a thinker.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I need in the role. Or you might be getting someone who's just all about planning and not really acting. And you're like, okay, that's good at a strategy level, but I need like more of a doer.
Yeah.
Tell me about how this is expressed for you. You know, it's just another, there are just lots of different ways to triangulate. And I think those two tools are really helpful in an interview context because it'll show you, not perfectly, but it'll give you a little more insight.
Okay, well, that's good. Have you, speaking of those tests, have you done the Working Geniuses?
I don't think I have.
That's an interesting one too, because it's, if you have a chance, it's Pat Lincioni's new one, The Working Genius.
Oh, okay.
And it's pretty interesting because it looks at what you like to do, what you're good at doing, and what you don't like to do.
Yeah.
It's interesting anyway.
Yeah. Very helpful. Yeah. Those are all useful in different ways. The two that I do are useful for two things. One is understanding what they're motivated by.
Yep.
And what builds your erodes your credibility. That's the leadership languages. And then the management polarities really gets at what their preference is in terms of how they work.
Right.
And, so, and then more than anything, they're helpful for conversation starters because they're designed as polarities. You can talk as a continuum rather than a binary. And that can also, you can go a little deeper and get more information that way.
Okay. Any minefields to look out for?
I don't know that I have minefields that are obvious. It depends on the role and your personality and all that fun stuff. Obviously, like if somebody can't meaningfully answer what their areas of improvement are, that's going to be a problem. Like people need to be able to honor and own their blind spots or their weaknesses or things like that are pretty important. I'll sometimes ask a question that is gets at kind of the emotional intelligence. And the way I might do that is, what's something that happened recently that in a work context, it made you really upset? And then let them talk about what made them upset, because they're going to tell it, they're going to give you an indicator of their triggers, their tripwires. And not because you need to use that as a criterion for exclusion, but it just helps you understand, like, okay, that they're really angry by people moving slow, or they're super angry at people who are critical, or they're, you know, what's something that made you really angry? Oh, they're really angry about people who play politics. That makes them really angry. And that'll give you a clue, like, oh, okay, that's important. And then you might ask, how'd you handle that?
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll make themselves look more saintly than they really are, but that's okay. You know, you can still,
yeah, at least they know what they want to do.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But I do think you can get a sense for whether or not they're capable of that. And then the other big thing I would just say about interviewing is people underestimate the power of their intuition. Like,
yeah,
ask good questions and whatever, but really your intuition is your greatest gift in interviewing. It's a crapshoot. It's hard to do well. And that's why I use intuition far more than I use most other things. I mean, I like those tools and I use them, and I use them to kind of validate my intuition. But
yeah, part of the challenge is the continuation of this ongoing challenge is the descriptions have been written, and then someone comes in and their background doesn't actually fit that description. Mm-hmm. But going to the urgency versus efficacy. So I was able to really use that this week and say, wait a minute, are we trying to fill the hole, or are we trying to really find the right person? And I got everybody to say, oh, okay, you know, so is 30 days really going to make a big difference if we're going to get the right person on board? So...
good. I was going to ask how that conversation went, if they were receptive.
Yeah. So it was good. So it's that ongoing process. And I have a list of questions, but you've done it a lot more. So I thought, you know, you'd be a good guy to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you've got a good handle, and I know you've done it enough. I'm just trying to consider anything else.
But it's like anything, you know, we've all done things lots of different ways. It never hurts to hear another opinion. It's always, I never thought of it that way. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it could, absolutely.
And you get in that situation where it's the absolute right question to ask, because it's the other thing that happens is you get in that situation. And I've done it where I've interviewed with someone else, interviewing someone, and they end up telling their life story versus, hello, we're here to ask them questions, not to, for you to tell them about your experience. Quiet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Really,
what I have done in that situation to turn it around is say, well, now you heard what happened. What would you have done? And then it kind of brings it. Then it kind of brings it back. So
it's not absolutely. Absolutely. I sometimes ask like an open-ended question, like, which is kind of an interesting question. Sometimes you go, what haven't I asked you that you think I should have?
Yes. Yeah. Which is always good. And then there's those questions that you're not allowed to ask, that you're trying to figure out a way, mm-hmm. how do I ask this question? And without getting the letter from the attorney tomorrow, she asked me if I wanted children. What's the 5-year plan?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. How about you, Michelle? Do you have any favorite interview questions?
I mean, I do. I like centering my interview questions more around behaviors. Because I mean, I can teach payroll, I can teach how to use our system, but I cannot teach you how to service a client. So I structure things around, tell me about a time you've made a mistake and how did you handle that? If an individual tells me, oh, I don't make mistakes, then I'm like, yeah, no. We all make mistakes every day, all day. So, but I like the question here. I was just actually formulating interview questions because we are filling a role but I like the question, Shane, you just said, what's a question that you think I haven't asked you that you think I should ask? I don't even know if I could answer that question. So that was
It sometimes doesn't yield anything, but I like to do it. I like to ask it anyway, because it gets at how they think.
Yeah. Or even the process, what's your favorite interview question? You know, I've asked mine, what's yours? Especially if they're going into some sort of management or leadership role.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but that's, and I try to see their team fit. Because even though servicing our clients, you know, I tell individuals, even though it's not necessarily a team sport, we're still a team sport. You know, when you need all hands deck, so, you know, I'll ask questions like, so if I was to ask one of your team members, what would they say about you? I'd ask things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, good stuff.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I'd rather suffer through having a take on the additional workload myself or whatever to find the right fit versus then just rushing to a fit because we don't want to,
because it's way,
whatever, we don't want to go through the pain or whatever it is.
Exactly. It's like getting married. You know, it's so easy to get them. It's so hard to get rid of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Shane's not laughing. Exactly. I'm like, old. That line. It's okay. When you're old, you can say those things.
I love it. I think it's great.
What was your biggest success this last year, Shane?
My biggest success
that you felt you had a big success this year.
Let's see, boy, I just had such a great year. I feel like everything was a success. I feel great this year. What was my biggest success? That's an interesting question. Look at me, not able to answer it. I just feel like getting this program up and running and actually working was my biggest success. And it was this whole last year that kind of got it up and running and working and getting results and people, you know, talking about transformation and actually seeing the transformation and all that. I had done it obviously for private clients, but I hadn't done it in group contexts. I'd done it in one or two group contexts, but not in like an evergreen perpetual. I'd done it with cohorts. So this was the first year that I just tried to say, I'm just going to let people come and go as they please. And I wondered, will that work? Will that actually get the results that I think I can? And I feel great about it. I feel like it absolutely worked and is still working. And that was it, probably.
How about you, Michelle?
That's a loaded question. Well, my big success has really been more on a personal level. I've made a lot of growth and strides personally, and working through lots of different things. But
What about you, Susan?
Investing in me.
Great. What did you do?
That was it. I hired Shane Hips. No, but it's true. You know,
that's
you spend so much of your life as an employee, a parent, you know, and you're always mentoring someone else doing something. I did this for me.
Good for you. Well, I'm thrilled to have been a part of it.
It's really valuable and something that I have shared with so many others that you know, it, finding the right person to have a conversation with, whether it's, you know, from an emotional standpoint or, you know, working through the childhood issue of whatever, finding that right person who you have the comfort to have those conversations with. And being, because I think for me, it was the first time that I sat down and said, what are you really struggling with? And what can you do to at least make an effort to move the rock a bit?
I love it.
And love it. I'm telling you, Facebook was listening.
As they do always.
So glad you found me. Yeah, I'm so glad you found me. It is quite a miracle when you think about it. I put together these ads and this funnel, and I pay Facebook money, and people want to get on a phone with me. Yeah. And it's wonderful. Like, there's these great human beings that I get to interact with and help be a part of their transformation. It's such a great thing.
Well, I got my email from you that said, you know, I have today and I have next week. And so part of your planning on the coming up year needs to be, what does it look like once you finish this? How does that relationship continue on? Maybe not in as much of an interactive way, but in other ways, because I think it's really important to have that continued dialogue of some kind.
Well, Michelle just signed up for an additional 9 months of coaching. So I do offer 3, 6, and 9 month continuation packages. That's one path. And by the way, I feel like it's possible that the automation may be wrong with because I think we missed a couple of weeks and I added a few weeks, and I'm not sure that the automation, that email that is like, it triggers when you have two sessions left, but I think technically, I think you have four.
That's like the best news I've heard all day.
Yeah. But you know, Susan, I want to send you, I'll send you a little information on that, and you can review it and we can talk about whether you want to keep going and what that looks like in terms of cost and all that fun stuff. And it literally is as simple as you saying, yep, you signed a credit card and you just keep going. You'll just keep getting access to this. And I'd love to have you. I think it'd be wonderful. If that feels like, I don't really need that, then my suggestion is stay following me on social media. I'm always updating things on Instagram and LinkedIn and what have you. And then you've got my email list. So there's regular emails that'll go out. And
perfect.
But if you want, let's see if we can get you to continue on at least for some period of time.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Awesome. Okay. Well, I'll send you an email after this call, and then maybe look at a time to chat.
Perfect.
Okay. Well, I think we've reached our end together, and it's always a pleasure, and I'll look forward to talking to you all next week.
Perfect. Thank you. Have a great week, Michelle.
You too. Enjoy.
Thanks.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you.
Bye.